This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by David Mead, the Chief of What's Next at Start With Why. Thank you very much for joining me, David.
Of course. Nice to be here. Thanks, Brian.
So to start off, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I don't know if you're how familiar your audience is with Simon Sinek. We'll obviously talk about Simon and some of the ideas that he has pioneered and thought about, but I met Simon about 8 years ago now, and we'll talk about the ideas that he shares, but I heard him speak and just became very inspired by what he had to say, and it made a lot of sense, and it was something that I already knew, that I already sort of felt, but I didn't have a great way of articulating it or putting it into words. So I was really appreciative to be able to meet him, and we kept in touch, and one thing sort of led to another, and I've been working with Simon since 2009. I started out just doing more sort of back of the house kind of stuff. I was answering emails and taking Simon's ideas and content and turning them into communication and website articles and blog posts and that kind of thing. Working on helping him develop an online course. Did that for the first 2 or 3 years or so, and then 2012, I began supporting him with all of the speaking and workshop requests that we were getting. He wasn't able to handle those all by himself. So that's when I started going out on the road. And so now majority of my time is spent sharing these ideas with audiences, mostly in North America, but I do quite a bit of international as well. But that's a little bit about me. Anything else you want to know?
You said when you met him, you were doing something else. May I ask what that was?
Yeah, it was a similar field. My background is in training and development, and so when I heard him speak and share these ideas, it was sales training that I was in charge of at this little startup where I was working, and I basically just took his idea and wrote it down into my training manual, and so it fits so well with sort of the sales world that I was in, and as I came to learn. These ideas are applicable to any industry and any type of organization, no matter what your role or title is, because it's a very human concept and it really applies to all of us.
I've seen a few of the videos by Simon, but could you describe a little bit about what he does and what Start With Why is?
Sure. So Start With Why is, we're a small team, we're about 19 people now, and To put it very simply, we have a vision of the world that is a little bit different than the world in which we live today. And that is a world in which a vast majority of people wake up inspired to go to work, feel safe while they're there, and then come home at the end of the day fulfilled by the work that they do. That is unfortunately not the reality for most people. Most people don't love their jobs and often flat out hate their jobs. And we believe that everyone deserves to have have meaning in their work and to do something that matters to them, that feels something that they feel good about doing. So, and it's not that, if you don't have that in your job right now, that you have to quit and find another job. It's often the environments in which we operate. And it's often because of the leadership within the organizations in which we work that are more focused on the numbers than they are about the people. So while numbers and metrics and all those things are vitally important, taking care of the people ends up taking care of the numbers. And so this is sort of what Simon discovered, it's about 11 years ago now or so, is this concept called the Golden Circle, which is, if you haven't seen the TED Talk, he's got the simple model that just explains what it is that sets these inspiring leaders and inspiring organizations apart. And it's basically just a bullseye with three words. You have why in the center in the bullseye, and then you have how sort of at that center ring, and then in the outer ring is what. And every organization and even our own careers operate on these three levels: what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. Now, everybody understands what they do. This is the product you sell or the service you offer or the job title that you have. Some people understand how they do what they do, which is how are you different or special? How do you set yourself apart from somebody else who's doing about the same thing that you're doing? What are the core values? How do you run your business? It's different. But very few people and very few organizations really understand and, more importantly, can clearly articulate why they do what they do. And this goes beyond, profits and growth and selling more stuff and gaining market share and all those things that we traditionally think about as, targets or goals for an organization. when we talk about why, we really talk about what's the driving cause or purpose. What's your belief? Why does your organization really exist? What's the human reason you do the work that you do? So when we when we operate strictly based on what and how, there's a lot of trying to convince people to buy our product or use our service or to pick up on our idea or to vote for us or whatever it is that we're trying to get them to do. And there's a lot of energy expended. There's a lot of time that's expended. There's often it can be more expensive because we have to do value added. We have to give things away for free. We have to, again, try to convince people based on just what we do and how we are different than somebody else. But the organizations that really have long-term success, that are more profitable, that have better cultures, that have people that are more inspired and fulfilled to do the work that they do, start with why. They clearly communicate their cause or their purpose, their view of the world, the thing that they're trying to build, the thing that they're trying to get to in the long term. And when you have people inspired to show up to work for that, and when you have people inspired to do business with you or use your product or service because they want to support that, that's when you get trust. That's when you get loyalty. That's when you get discretionary effort and all those great things that actually just naturally make the numbers improve.
Could you give me a couple of examples of companies that you think take the why as their main objective?
Sure. So I'll list off a few that people may have heard of, and then I could perhaps give you a more specific example. But these are companies like Disney, Lego, the Virgin Companies, Costco, Apple, Southwest Airlines is another great example. Tesla, electric cars is another great example. But all of these organizations, you'll notice they're not that different necessarily in the product or service that they sell. They offer the, very similar products or services to their competitors, but they stand out in their industries and we look at them a little bit differently. So, one of the examples that we use, and this is going to be, obviously out of context for this particular audience, but I think it's a product that everybody knows is Lego. Most organizations and most people think, act, and communicate from the outside of that golden circle in. They start with what, and then they talk about, how they're different or special, and that's usually where they stop. So the example that I give with Lego, for example, is, if Lego were like their competitors, they might say something like, we make plastic building blocks. They're fun and they encourage, learning and creativity in people of every age group. Want to buy some? And this is normal. This is, usually, in essence, how organizations talk to us. They tell us what they do, what their product is, and how it's better or, how it differentiates itself. And they expect that to be enough. But it's not. And it's boring and it doesn't inspire us. And all we do is sort of look for the lowest price. When somebody, when an organization communicates to us like that. But the way that Lego actually does it is backwards. They start from the inside of the golden circle and work outwards. They start with their why, and they say things like, everything we do is to inspire and develop the builders of tomorrow. The way we do that, the how, is by encouraging fun and creativity in people of every age group. And the what is still there. We build plastic building blocks or we sell plastic building blocks, but that's just the product or service that allows them to help bring that higher cause or purpose to life. And what you'll notice is, in that example, the what and the how, don't change. They're exactly the same. So what you do and how you do it don't necessarily have to be different than what they are now. But when you communicate the why, when you talk about the reason that you exist, when you talk about what you're trying to build, the world that you imagine, it just gives more context and meaning to what you do and how you do it. And what tends to happen, and this is just a natural social phenomenon of how we are hardwired to operate as human beings, we like to surround ourselves with other people who share similar values and beliefs. So when we, if you think of your life outside of work, for example, if you're the member of a club or a group or an association or a congregation or whatever it is that you choose to give up your time, your energy, your resources, or maybe even your money to be a part of that group, the reason that we do that is because we like to be around other people who share common values and beliefs. We trust them. We have a relationship with them. We have something in common with them. This is naturally what brings us together as a species. And at work, so often, we're not doing it the same way. We are not surrounding ourselves with people who necessarily believe what we believe. We're just all surrounding ourselves with people who are trying to, you know, achieve the same goal in the form of a metric or a number. But we don't necessarily trust each other. We don't necessarily share common values and beliefs with each other. And if you think about it, when we first go look for a job, generally what we look at is, you know, the salary, the benefits, the perks, what do I get? And if I happen to like the people that I work with, well, that's a nice bonus, but it's not something we expect. But in any other aspect of our you know, personal lives outside of work, that's the first thing that we look at is, do I like these people? Do I trust these people? Do I, you know, want to build a relationship with these people? Do we have anything in common? And so we're doing it differently at work for some reason. And if we just follow how we naturally operate best as human beings and as organizations, understand what's the common cause or purpose that we all have? What are we all coming together to build? What are we all, you know, what's the vision of the world that we have that we all want to work together to create and find meaning in that together? That's really what builds great cultures. That's what brings teams and organizations together and where trust and cooperation really thrive.
Just on your point there, you mentioned both Virgin and Tesla. I've read one of the books by Branson, and I remember he said that when a person comes to an interview, even if they don't get it, they should come away from the interview going, I would love to work there, and come away with a very positive opinion, and come away with something like a token, Virgin miles on a flight, or a credit for their Virgin phone, or whatever it is, so that they'll go tell their friends that I didn't get it this time, but I'll try the next time. But I will take one other point on this one. You mentioned Tesla as well, and I have read the book about Elon Musk. And there are, from the book, it would sound like there are at times that Tesla is not a particularly nice place to work.
Yeah. So this comes up a lot with Apple too, right? Steve Jobs was a jerk. He was not, you know, a nice quote unquote person. And it was he was a very difficult man to work for. And I think Elon Musk is similar. There, I think there's the risk that we run into of sort of expecting that each of these leaders of these organizations is going to be a perfect human being and a perfect leader, and they're not. And you know, Tesla is not perfect, Apple is not perfect, none of these, Virgin is not perfect. They all have their problems and they all have their things that they need to work through. But I think what cannot be disputed is the fact that these organizations do have a higher cause or purpose. It is not just about selling stuff. You know, for Elon Musk, I read that book as well, and it's been a little while, but I think from when he was in college, he kept thinking about, you know, the future of humanity and, you know, what can I do to create a sustainable and happy future for humanity? And that has driven everything that he has done. And the way that I sort of interpret the Elon Musk, you know, and having it sometimes be not a great place to work, the way that I sort of see it is, he is so clear on this vision of the world that he is building, this why that he is after, that he has no patience for people who are not ready to help him get there. And it, you know, for better or worse, that's just sort of the way that he is. The other thing that I can't remember if I read it in that book or if I read it online somewhere, but I read some reports of a couple of employees that used to work at Tesla, and they left because of, you know, it was a bad situation for them, and the culture wasn't great for them. And while they will admit that, you know, it was for them, it was not a great place to work, and there was a lot of pressure and too much stress and all this stuff, they said that they would, you know, never say anything negative about Elon Musk because of the vision that he has. They absolutely believe in what he's doing. It's just that, you know, the culture was not a great fit for them. So that's an interesting thing to think about as well, I think.
No, that's all fair. We're going to change our topic a little bit now. So we've covered kind of the about who you are, start with why, and the focus of the rest of the podcast is going to be about kind of engineers, engineering attitudes, communication, promotion, and a few things like that. And I know you've told me you not necessarily have specific experience with engineers, but you have in other fields, and it applies just across the board.
Sure. I mean, I've certainly have some experience with engineers. I wouldn't say I'm an expert. No. So, but yeah, happy to share what I know.
So a common enough complaint that I've heard from people who are not within engineering departments of companies is that engineers are not particularly good at communicating. Mm-hmm. What can engineers do to improve that?
I think communication, like any skill, is something that is learned. And, you know, you have to understand that, and I'm speaking in generalities here, obviously, but a lot of times the folks that end up in, you know, engineering jobs, it's a certain kind of person, just like it takes a certain kind of person to be a salesperson. It's not for everybody. And engineering is not for everybody. And so you sort of get certain personalities that, that sort of congregate toward these different, industries and different departments. So I think it's a matter of understanding. And I think the why really comes back into it is when you know, when you have that common vision with whoever it is that you're supposed to communicate the work that you're doing to, if you both know, if you have something in common that you're working toward, I think it can open up that line of communication, because it's not just communicating about a particular piece of software or the particular project and, you know, this is what it does and this is how it works, but understanding the bigger vision and how that engineer fits into the piece, what their puzzle piece is in the whole picture, might just, you know, inspire them to think, huh, if I can communicate, you know, this piece of it a little more clearly, and I can help somebody from the other department that I need to communicate this to, or who the, you know, the end user of the software that I'm going to be developing or whatever it is, to make sure that, you know, we can bring that higher cause or purpose to light. That might be one thing, is having, again, that seeing that bigger picture rather than just seeing it at the micro level. Now, having said that, I understand that, you know, a lot of folks that are more analytical or more just that think a little bit differently, it's, you know, that this idea of why or vision may not be terribly inspiring to them. So everybody's a little bit different. But the other thing that I would say is, why not give somebody or give everyone the opportunity to be inspired by something more, to be, you know, to find meaning in the work that they do, rather than assuming that just because they're an engineer, they're not going to be inspired by this. So we'll just tell them what to do. We'll ask for their thing, and they can, you know, and then communication, I think, falls flat because of that.
I think you're right that quite often we as engineers, we're sometimes isolated, and seeing the bigger picture isn't necessarily that easy. Are there steps that companies or maybe departments more broadly could take to get the whole thing across? For so what I mean by that is, quite often engineers are focused on a particular release that has to have these number of features. They're not aware, sure, of the marketing, they're not aware of the sales, they're not aware of the support, they're not aware of the deals that are going on to make the money come in the door. Mm-hmm. How can companies better communicate everything in a way that's not overloading people and at the same time not leaving people out?
Sure. I think the simplest solution, and we've seen this happen in different organizations that we've worked with, you know, when it comes to sort of integration and making sure that everybody is involved, again, it goes back to, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but when an organization really understands what its higher cause or purpose is, that really brings out amazing stories, because the why is, it comes from our past. It is who we are when natural best, it is the contribution that we make in the lives of people and the impact that that contribution has. So every single organization has the stories that where people can talk about the times that they have been proud to work there. And perhaps they don't all come from, you know, the engineering department, but they'll come from sales, they'll come from HR, they'll come from, you know, the executive team. And all of these stories really help people to reconnect with the reason they do the work that they do. I mean, you could be an engineer anywhere. Right? You could develop software for a number of different companies. And if you don't necessarily have a connection or an emotional tie to the company that you're with, then of course you're going to show up, you're going to clock in, you're going to do your job, you're going to clock out, you're going to go home. And it's not going to be fulfilling or meaningful. But step one, if the organization can articulate and define why it does what it does, and then begin to share those stories. And it's not about, you know, you don't have to overload people with the stories, but once a week, couple times a month, whatever it is, to the entire organization, send out a story that really relates why we do what we do. And, you know, and no matter what your department is, whether you're customer facing or not, whether you see how your, you know, the project that you're working on affects, you know, the end users or not, this is a story that shows that as an organization as a whole, this is what we are contributing to the lives of other people. This is the difference that we're making. And that helps people to understand that that particular piece of software that they're working on has an effect. They might not see it firsthand, but they know the outcome of it. They can hear those stories, and that's what helps them to connect with that. And so I think making sure that everybody hears the same stories, giving everybody opportunities to share the same stories. And it's not only about the good that you do outside to the clients that you serve. It's also what happens inside. These are the why has to live on the inside first. So the contribution and impact that you make on the lives of people, yes, your product helps you do that, but you should also be able to treat the people inside with that same type, make that same contribution and have that same kind of impact on the people on the inside. And those stories can happen, you know, even on teams that are not client facing or that don't necessarily have contact with the outside.
To go back to communication just a little bit, I interviewed a writer and a software, a very well-known guy in the field, called John Sonmez, and he said that when he was younger, he was shy and very bad at communicating. So he set himself a challenge. He'd go into a mall and say hello, that was it, hello, to 50 people. Mm-hmm. And that helped him get over his shyness. Is there any one thing you could suggest to people who have poor communication skills as a way of improving?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, if do it in a place that is low risk, right? So when you are out with friends, maybe ask an additional question that you'd normally keep to yourself. Or, you know, if you're out with a group of friends and you're the shy one, turn to the person next to you and engage them in a little conversation. Just ask them a question. Again, practice where it doesn't really matter, where it's not going to make that big of a difference, but where, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you can try it. And if you fail or if you screw up, it's not that big of a deal. But I love that idea of starting very small. I think it was, I'm not a huge follower of Tony Robbins or anything, but I heard that he has a thing about setting goals. And you mentioned this engineer that set a goal of just saying hello. And Tony Robbins said that the reason that most of us don't reach our goals is because we set them to be way too high, right? We decide we're going to, you know, at the beginning of the year, we're going to go to the gym 5 days a week. Well, that's just too much. Going from 0 to 5 days a week is just not going to happen. But what if we went once? What if we, you know, started doing 10 push-ups at home? When we can do that, it builds our confidence and lets us know that, you know what, I can do this. If I just walk around and say hello to a stranger and that's all I say, I know I can do that. So it's starting very small. And I think patience is a huge element as well. We've got to be patient with ourselves, recognize what our weaknesses may be, and you know, realize that it's going to take some time to get there. But I love what you suggested.
Another challenge I've seen in software organizations, whether it's between engineers or between other people within the overall department, is that people seem to have a lot of difficulty dealing with each other, especially when it comes to conflict. And conflict quickly turns bitter.
Yeah.
Why does that happen? What can we do about it?
There's a distinction that a friend gave to me about sort of this idea of conflict or taking a position on something that causes conflict. And it has been really, really insightful for me and helped me change the way that I look at conflict. So normally, when we have a strong opinion about something, we will take a position on something. And whenever there's a position that is taken, inevitably there is a counter position. And all of a sudden, we've got two people banging heads and we've got two different ideas sort of coming to head with each other. Rather than taking a position against something or fighting against something, it is much more generative if we stand for something. When we fight against something, there's inevitably going to be somebody else with a different opinion that's going to fight against that. But when we stand for something and we're not against anything, we're just for something else, it's much easier to get on the same page with people and point to something that we are for and find a commonality rather than finding what's different between us. Why don't we find out what we have in common? What are we both working toward? And the analogy that I like to use, and I think about this all the time, especially with family conflict, is if you think about, you know, two people sat across from each other at a table, they are fighting against each other and they're sitting across from each other, pointing at each other. If you simply bring one of those people around, so that you're both sitting on the same side of the table. You can both point at the thing that you're working toward, and it makes it much easier to work towards something rather than continuing to fight against something, which is just, it never, I wouldn't say never, but it rarely works out well.
That takes someone coming around to the other side of the table.
It does. And often that has to be us swallowing our pride and doing it ourselves, which is not an easy thing to do either.
So I'm one of the people who's very much in favor of conflict when it's in a useful form. I don't mean the sort of shouting at each other, you know, sticking to a ridiculous opinion when it's clearly indefensible. But conflict resolves things, I find, far quicker than brushing it under the rug, as often happens. But it kind of takes your willingness to accept you're wrong when you are and to move on and not to hold a grudge. But that often is the case with people as well. I remember one company I worked in, Karen, Dave, and John. I had to work with the three of them. Karen and Dave were friends, but they really didn't like John. I could not have the three of them in one room because they would just bicker and be snide. And that was a company people used to stay in at a really long time. So those people had been in that company 10 years. So their opinions and their positions had become very entrenched.
Yeah.
If, let's say, let's say that's happening between one engineer and another, what can be done when people have dug their heels in so deep and so long?
I think it's important to just sort of, and again, there's not one right answer to this, but the first thing that sort of comes to mind is shifting the context. And you said, you know, when there's one engineer sort of digging in his or her heels against another, shift the context. Rather than digging in your heels against somebody else, again, this is where we have seen, and I've even experienced this on our own team, and I'll give you a basic example here in a minute. But when an organization has that why, that higher cause or purpose, when people know what they're working toward, it's no longer a problem between me and him. Right? It's no longer between the two of us. It's now, all right, we have our differences, and it's not like we have to love each other and be best friends. We have our differences and we recognize those. However, if we are both, inspired or interested in bringing out this bigger cause or purpose, this thing that really drives us to come to work and the things that gives us joy and meaning in the work that we do, we can set those differences aside and work together to find the possibilities, find the different ways, use that conflict in a generative way to come up with new ideas, different ideas. How can we do it better? How can we do it differently? I don't know about that. What about this? That's the type of conflict that can help, but it has to be moving towards something, and we have to shift the context to be generative rather than degenerative. So the basic example that we have on our team, and I can't think of one specific example to give you, but just there are, you know, we're a very small team at Start With Why. We're about 19 people, I think I mentioned. And we don't all agree on everything, but we have such an undying devotion to building this world that we imagine that when we come, when we disagree on something, or when we just fundamentally know that we are, we have a different opinion or idea than somebody else, that does not get in the way. We just are able to agree to disagree on that particular thing or whatever it is and keep our eye on the prize, on the bigger picture, and work together because we know that even though we might have those other things uncommon among us or between us, we have something that is common between us, and that's what we focus on and that's what we work toward.
If, let's say, you have a colleague with whom you do not get along, they're difficult, or from your perspective, they're very difficult. From their perspective, you do not see eye to eye, and all this why just isn't good enough. How do you deal with those scenarios?
Again, there's no one right answer. I mean, this is all messy human stuff, and everybody is a little bit different, and every situation is a little bit different. I would say, what we would, and this is not something that's come up in our organization, so I can't really speak to that, but the suggestion that we make, or what I would say is, if I were to give an idea to an organization that's experiencing this, do everything you can to continue to build this culture around why, about around the vision, around the purpose. And if you have a person or a couple of people who just don't get it, who are not willing to come along, then, I mean, you have a decision to make. And whether that decision is to, you know, move them to a different department where perhaps they are in better alignment with what that department is doing, or what the contribution that particular department makes to the organization, great. If it's just that they're not a good fit for the culture, and it's, you know, maybe best to help them transition into something else that is going to be a better fit for them, it's a decision that you have to make. But, you know, we can't fix people. All we can do is provide the environment where they can feel inspired to change themselves. If they're not willing to do that, I mean, there's only so much that we can do.
One last problem I want to ask you about is something that I've seen, and I think other engineers would agree. Quite often when promoting an engineer from a sole contributor role into more of a team lead managerial role, quite often it's the, let's put it in quotes, the best engineer who is promoted. And by best, it typically means technically the strongest, but that person may or may not have any people skills. In your experience, is that a good way of promoting, or what would you suggest as a way of promoting people into leadership roles?
I think that's awful.
Yeah, I know.
This is certainly not specific to engineers. Where we see, and I'll give you a different context of what I have seen, but it's very similar. A lot of times in a sales organization, the top performer gets promoted. And if they continue to, you know, to perform as well as they have been doing in the past, they will then become a sales manager, and they will have other sales people below them. The two problems with promoting for skill are, first, it leads to micromanagement, because it is absolutely true that the leader of those people or the manager of those people can do the job better than the people that are now doing it. And so the tendency is to go in and micromanage, and you got to do it this way, and you got to do it that way. And if you don't do it this way, it's not going to work. So micromanaging becomes a huge problem. Two is when we promote for skill rather than for, you know, ability to lead or to take care of people, it's much more common to end up with a toxic leader, because you might have, you know, again, in the sales context that we have seen, you've got this person that, yes, is absolutely the top performer, but they do it by stepping on everybody else and stabbing people in the back. So if that's who you're promoting, then that's the type of leadership that you're going to get. And all of a sudden, you end up with an organization with all of these leaders at the top that are just absolute jerks who won't trust, who won't cooperate, who won't work together, who will micromanage, and it ruins the entire culture. So this is a huge problem, because obviously, specifically in a field like engineering, obviously, you get a lot of training, and you go to school, and you get degrees, and you get all of this training to do the job. But when we promote an engineer to lead other engineers, there's rarely any training on how to do that. And so we get in this position, and we think, shoot, now I'm in charge of leading people, and I have no education for that. There is no training for that. And so what people often default to is their ability to do the skill. But I think one of the things that is so important to remember is that when you are promoted to a position of leadership, you are no longer responsible to do the job. You are responsible to take care of the people who do the job. And often, too often, there's just not training for that.
No, I agree. You're absolutely right. You have to let go. You have to accept that it may not be done the way you would have done it. But as long as it gets done, it's okay. And then you should groom those people, assist them with the skills that you have. If they're doing something, then you can give them a bit of advice. Do. If you can't, leave them alone. And then get, you know, solve problems for them. If they need resources, get them. If they need whatever it happens to be, help in that way. So then, if I was to ask you a question, if you're not going to promote the most technically savvy, how do you identify the person to promote?
I think it's a bigger, there's a little bit broader context of just, you know, picking somebody to promote. I think organizations that are doing this well and are promoting the right people are putting systems and processes in place to identify and train the people who are interested in leadership, And it, again, there's a huge difference between leadership and management, right? Management is about getting stuff done. Leadership is about taking care of people. So you can do, you know, management training, which is, you know, how do you meet the KPIs and how do you get the job out on time with all the features that it needs to do and all those things. But the organizations that are promoting the right people and have really strong leaders that take care of people are doing leadership training. And they're talking about, you know, how do you communicate? How do you listen? How do you, rather than, you know, giving your people all the answers when they come to you for help, how do you get them to think? How do you empower your own people? Like, it's how do you take care of the people so that they can do a better job of getting the job done? And a lot of times these programs or these trainings are volunteer. A lot of times, you know, leadership of the organization will identify people who they just can see are care about the people around them, who are the first ones to volunteer and help, the first ones that will sort of step in when somebody's struggling with something. And you can identify those people or take volunteers and say, look, this is the type of leadership that we're going for in this organization. It's about taking care of people. If you're interested in that, we're offering, you know, this leadership training curriculum. We have people, you know, go through that way. When it comes time to promote, you're promoting the people who are going to do the best job of taking care of those that they lead.
Very good advice. Any final notes before we wrap up for this evening, David?
I would just, you know, the biggest point that I guess we try to make is that this idea of leadership, this idea of communication, of dealing with other people, it's just all messy human stuff, and nobody does it perfectly and nobody does it right all the time. And, you know, we all have places where we can improve and do better. But I think the biggest key is patience with ourselves, patience with each other. And again, trying to remind ourselves, what's the bigger picture here? What am I contributing to? What difference are we really trying to make as an organization? And it's amazing when people can reconnect or connect with that element. Their day-to-day job might not change, but the way they show up to that day-to-day job will change. And naturally, they will just, it changes who they're being, not necessarily what they're doing. And that state of being is what's so important in that trust and collaboration and taking care of each other to get important things done.
And if people wanted to find out more about you and your organization, startwithwhy.com?
Yep. You can also Google Simon Sinek. You'll find hours and hours and hours of great video from him and from me and a couple other people on our team. But startwithwhy.com will be a great place to start.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time this evening, David.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Oh We by Immortal Beats.